Happy Thursday. It's the Ira Kaufman Podcast starring the sage, the great sage of Tampa Bay sports, Mr. Ira Kaufman. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. Lee DeKemper is with us. Of course, we're presented by Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon, proud supporters of all of Ira's work on JoeBucksFan.com, his Monday, Wednesday, Friday columns, and of course, these great podcasts every Tuesday and Thursday, and the popularity just continues, Sage. It is great to see you. You got the white Ed Morris Cadillac gear on, Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon and Tampa gear. Nice. How's it going, Mr. Sage?
All right. We're out here at One Buck Place, so it's all about being white for that sun. You know, it's been rough out here. Next week's mandatory mini camp. You realize within a week that we're going to be saying goodbye to these guys for about 6 weeks, and then we'll be ready for training camp. Here come the stick carriers in force, and we'll be there to greet them.
And then we're going to sweat.
And then we're going to sweat.
And I guess you know that since you're wearing white, there's no spaghetti and meatballs for you today.
I understand that.
Ira, I thought you were 6 weeks, no bucks. I thought you were going to be having ribs with Vinnie Curry. You've got Ali Marpet. You're
well,
always bugging him.
Officially, no bucks. But I'll tell you what. Our podcast keeps going. The columns keep going. All the stories you guys file keep going. We don't take a break over here.
Just because the bucks will be gone for 6 weeks does not mean you're going to be gone for 6 weeks. And people need to keep listening because you never know what kind of surprises are coming.
And we expect to have some intriguing guests on.
Yeah, subscribe to the podcast, iTunes, Podbean, Google Play, free subscription, get an alert when the podcast pops. Of course, these gentlemen are talking circles, Ira, around. We've got a big podcast on Tuesday, a can't-miss podcast, so I'm fired up about that.
And we've had some good guest podcasts with Coach Duffner and DeMar Dotson. This one, I think, might top the cake.
And Cameron Brate, so all of those are available. If you haven't listened to those, you can go back. But, Ira, you're the guest of honor. It's all about you, the sage. And you scared the crap out of a lot of people recently, Ira, on the last podcast. We closed that podcast with a question from a fan asking about Rondé Barber getting in the Hall of Fame. And Ira, you said, quote, 40% chance of him being a Hall of Famer. Now, you did say, yeah, we got to get him into the room first. That's what you're worried about. But 40%?
All right. First, I want to say he'll close in a podcast in that manner. It's like, you know, an episode and there's a murder at the very end and you don't know who the hell did it and you can't wait to get to the next one.
A cliffhanger.
So here we are. We're at a Rondé hanger. Here we are. Now, I want to say right off the bat, Lee, that in no way does that reflect my opinion or the two other guys that are in this room. What it does reflect is my conversations with people that have votes. Some of them. I didn't talk to all 48 people, but I've talked to enough of them to get a sense of the relative strengths and weaknesses of Rondé Barber and how people perceive him outside of Tampa Bay. You know, look, guys, you got to remember certain things. I'm asked all the time about Mike Allstott. And when I tell people, Mike Allstott's name never comes up. It never comes up with the guy in Pittsburgh. It never comes up with the guy in Arizona. First of all, they didn't see Mike Allstott play every week like we did. He plays fullback. It's a position that is not recognized in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, especially in the modern era. It's just not. So, you know, look, Mike Allstott, arguably, in my opinion, is the most popular player in Buck history.
Whoa. More so than Leroy Salmon.
I think so.
Wow.
I think so.
I know he's very popular. Don't get me wrong.
But outside of Tampa, he's not getting any traction.
Nothing. Man.
So you got to remember that. And the Bucs are not a high-profile organization. And rightfully so. When you look at their record, I think they have the worst record, total record, of any franchise in the National Football League that's playing right now.
Wow.
You know, even with those glory years, those seven, you know, years when they were a perennial playoff team. So that doesn't help Rondé's chances. Now, having said that, I was very saddened when he did not get into the room as one of the 15 finalists in his first year of eligibility, which was last year. He could have been talked about last year in that room. I didn't get that opportunity. Here we are again. You know, in a couple of months, we'll start whittling the ballots down. It starts with 125 names. But eventually, you know, in early January, it goes down to 15. And if you don't make the 15, you don't get talked about in that room, and you got no shot.
And just to be clear, when you refer to the room, because not everybody is as astute as you are, Ira, but when you refer to the room, that your final 15 That's when a player is presented. That's when the pros and cons are debated in a room with all the Hall of Fame voters.
And it's the morning, the day before the Super Bowl.
Saturday morning.
In Friday. The Super Bowl city. It starts about 7 in the morning. And we trundle out of there at about 4 in the afternoon, exhausted. And everybody that presents somebody in that situation knows going in, and the fans have to realize this. If I get one point across above all, this is the one. There's a maximum of 5. That's what the Pro Football Hall of Fame Board of Directors has ordered. Those are the rules. You can't put 8 in. You can put 2 in, but you can't put more than 5.
Unless it has to be whittled down to 5.
So what does that mean? Steve, in essence, 10 out of 15, at least, 10 out of those 15 finalists go home disappointed. Mm-hmm. And they're all in the city because they're all waiting for that knock on the door. But two-thirds of them, at least, but most of the time it's going to be two-thirds because most of the time you're going to use all 5 slots. You're not going to leave one unopened. That would be a travesty because, you know, there's such a long list of deserving people. Mm-hmm. So two-thirds go home disappointed. Now, John Lynch, you know, knows the feeling. Mm-hmm. You know, 0-5.
I've told him personally that you're upset about that.
I'm very upset.
Like, yeah, I know.
I'm very upset because I got to call, you know, I got to talk to Lynch that night, and I see his wife on occasion, and she looks, she looks at me like, what are you doing? What are you doing? And, you know, it's tough. So back to Rondé. I say 40% because, and I don't want our listeners to click off this podcast in disbelief when I say this. What do I hear? Rondé Barber, he's a system corner.
Yeah, it's lazy.
He plays the Tampa 2. It's a system corner. He ain't a shutdown corner like Deion Sanders. They're all telling
Who's
me what
Deion
he's
Sanders?
Not.
Yeah.
They're all telling me what he's not. It's almost like the Gerald McCoy argument. Stop telling me that he's not Warren Sapp and tell me that he's a 6-time Pro Bowler.
Outside of Night Train Lane, who was Deion Sanders? Nobody's Deion Sanders. There's one Deion.
Yeah, right? There's only one Deion Sanders.
Yeah, outside
and
of Night Train Lane.
The fact Deion Sanders didn't want to, he was so good at what he did that the fact that he didn't want to tackle anybody, which is almost unquestioned, nobody argues against that.
Not even him.
You can't even hold that against Deion Sanders because his job's to shut people down, and he did it to a degree that nobody in the modern era has done it. You know, he's going to take that side of the field away. He's going to take your best receiver away. He did it time and again. Revis, in his prime, I think was close.
Oh, really?
I think he was close. Not the Revis we saw here in Tampa.
Yeah, he was.
So where's Rondé Barber fit into this big picture, Steve? Well, he's the exact opposite of John Lynch in the sense of you can't make a statistical argument for John Lynch. He's a guy you had to have seen play. The way he impacts a game, big hits when you could hit people, and clutch plays. You know, Rondé is a statistical maven. He's a marvel. He's done things, and I'm already thinking about my opening lines if Rondé makes the finals list. And here's what I'm going to say. I believe, you know, I'm going to give our listeners an early glimpse into the presentation if I have privilege to make it. I'm going to say, hey, there's 24 defensive backs in Canton, 24 of them. None of them, 0, are as unique as Rondé Barber. And I believe that. I didn't say as good. I'm not going to say Rondé Barber's a better corner than Deion Sanders. I'm not going to say that.
Or Night Train Lane.
Or Night Train Lane. Even though some Buck fans might believe that. I mean, they might. But he's unique. And unique goes a long way. What's unique?
Different.
Warren Sapp was a 2-time all-decade defensive tackle. You know how rare that is? There's 5 in history.
Oh, really?
There's 5. I mean, the Bob Lillies, the Merlin Olsons, the Joe Greens. I mean, it's, you know, you're in that kind of company.
Joe Green was 2-time all-decade?
I think he was. But I think there's 5. I just think there's 5.
The reason I say that, because he came in, what, 69 and retired?
Yeah,
he
probably didn't make the 80s, but there's another guy in there. But there's 5. He was the 5th one, Sapp.
Bob Lilly, I
so,
can easily see, yeah.
You know, they've been playing football for 100 years. Five out in 100 years, that's the strong argument.
Is it fair when you know, just give people a you know, it's like a picture in their mind. When you talk about the room, when you argue, when you present players, is it akin to, you see this on PBS, when the British Prime Minister speaks before the House of Commons? Is it sort of like that?
Now, wait a minute. Are you suggesting that I dump my Brooklyn accent for
No, you're Maggie Thatcher or anything. But I mean, no, the setup. You know, you speak, and then they can badger you with questions or scoff at you or what have you.
Yes, and a lot of times people say, well, how long do you talk for? Well,
Peter King.
I'm of the firm belief. No, in making your presentation.
Oh.
And Peter King doesn't make presentations, but he comments, and he comments extensively. Steve, you talk for 7-8 minutes. If you go past that, I think it's diminishing returns.
You lose the crowd.
You lose the crowd.
All right. Speaking of diminishing returns.
So here, come on in. Come on into this. Come on into this discussion.
I got to rope you back here. 40%. That's what we're talking about. 40%. It's not 50. It's not 60. What you're saying is you've talked to a bunch of people, and most of them have no interest in Barber and as a Hall of Famer. They don't. It's not even on their radar.
Well, didn't they prove it last year? They didn't make them a finalist.
But then again, you know, I mean, you take pride in this. You educate them.
Absolutely. Now let me say this. John Lynch didn't make the finalist list his first year of eligibility, and he's been in there 5 years in a row. So I have every reason to think Rondé Barber's going to be discussed sooner rather than later.
Back to your All-Star point, you know, you get a lot of All-Star questions. I remember speaking to a guy, he's a longtime NFL beat writer in Pittsburgh, not Ed Bouchette. And I mentioned All-Star to him one time. And I personally don't think All-Star's going to get in there. It's just the way it is. And I mentioned All-Star to him, and he basically told me that most people think of All-Star as a dime store Jerome Bettis, a second-rate Jerome Bettis. That's the perception All-Star.
You know, you got a guy like Darryl Johnston, who was integral player in the Cowboys dynasty.
Oh, very much so.
He can't get a sniff.
I don't think he's as good as All-Star. But I know what you're saying. You know, how many rings does the guy have? And he was a key part of that Cowboys dynasty.
Allstott, frankly, probably didn't get enough of a shot from his own coaches.
Bingo.
To prove that he was at that caliber for the length of time.
Fair point.
Yeah, I mean, you can hold that against him, but that's just the reality. So, but speaking of Hall of Fame, Ira, let me get to Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon. Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa, just west of 275 on Fletcher. Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon, right there on Causeway Boulevard in Brandon. Those are Hillsborough County's Cadillac dealerships. You want to go to their websites, edmorescadillactampa.com. Start shopping right online. Same thing, edmorescadillacbrandon.com. All the great June offers are there. This month is the time to buy. Check them out. Our good friends there have 70-plus years of Edmore's quality.
You and I paid them a visit last month, and I got to look at the showroom. Man, I'm telling you, there's some great deals to be had.
Incredible quality, 70-plus years of Ed Morris across Florida. Great Florida dealerships, great local company. They do so much in the community, donating, and it's just a fabulous place. I have purchased my last two vehicles there. My daughter even got her car there. So it's a good thing. We recommend them wholeheartedly. Sage approved. Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa.com.
And I'm still waiting in the lobby over there, Lee.
I got a Hall of Fame.
Like Frankie Pentangeli in Godfather 2.
That's a great one. Frankie Pentangeli.
Ed Morris. They got me waiting in the lobby.
Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa.com and Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon.com are the websites.
Just as long as you don't go to an empty bar at 10 o'clock in the morning like Frankie Pentangeli.
Hey, a couple more points on Rondé Barber before we put it to bed. And we're going to be talking about Rondé, you know, in the fall because we'll be whittling the ballot down. A couple of quick points. One, the guy from Boston, Ron Borges, you know, been in this business a long time. He's been pimping Ty Law for the last 2 years. Ty Law has been a finalist. Can't get him in. Can't get him in. Ty Law, especially in the postseason, was a monster. He was a monster. Mm. And he makes a good point, Ron, in his presentations. Those early New England Super Bowl teams were defensive teams,
yes,
even though they had Brady.
He's right.
Like the one that beat the Rams. Upset the Rams. That's a defensive team. Ty Law picked off Peyton Manning 3 times in one playoff game.
Oh.
One playoff game. He was mugging everybody. I mean, they were very physical. They changed the rules, in part because of Ty Law.
Similar to the Steelers in the 70s.
That's strong.
Yeah.
Steve, he can't get him in. He can't get him in. He's beyond frustrated. Ty Law. I'll give you another guy. He's a local. Ken Riley was a heck of a cornerback for the Bengals.
Yeah.
He has 70s. 50. Is it 55? It might be 65. 65 career interceptions. That is an astronomical number. Mm-hmm. you know, Ronde's got in the 40s. This guy's got 65. He's never gotten in. Now he's back in. He's in the senior pool. The only way he can come in was the senior pool.
Probably got a better
chance. So he never came in as a modern candidate. He's never been talked about.
He was better than Roger Worley.
You know, and so yeah, and your guy made a great presentation for Worley.
Bernie McLeod.
And changed the mind. So, Steve, you know, for Buck fans that are saying Rondé Barber's a snap, they don't understand. We should be replaced. We don't know what we're talking about. I'm going to do my best. He's got a real chance, but, you know, he's not going to be a first ballot guy. He's just not going to be a first ballot guy. Now, this year, for example, I'll let it go with this. Here's your first ballot guys for the class of 2019. Tony Gonzalez. Champ Bailey. And I'm leaving out the biggest one of all. I can't even remember the third guy. But
Reed?
And Ed Reed.
Yeah.
Now, most people think they're going to take up three of five spots. Like, now, Champ Burley's number three on that list,
yeah.
I think you guys agree. You know, Tony Gonzalez, I think, is the all-time leader in tight.
Yeah, he's a no-brainer.
Reed's a monster.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Belichick thought Reed's one of the great players in NFL history. That's good enough for me. and Champ Bailey made 12 Pro Bowls. Lynch made nine. He made 12. He was a young player when Lynch joined the Broncos. He learned from John Lynch, but he was a great corner. So, you know, it doesn't get any easier, guys. If they take up three of the five spots, you know what that means? You got 12 candidates fighting for two spots.
That's
what you got. So for anybody that says, Kaufman, what the hell are you doing? Get Lynch in there, get Ronnie in there. 12 guys fighting for two. I know my math. That's two out of 12. That's one out of six. That's 16-point-something%. Give me, you know, you better pray for me.
I got a Hall of Fame related issue, but I figured out why Ira's wearing white. You're showing off your tan. You've been playing tennis. You're trying to flirt with the cheerleaders.
I thought he was going to say I'm a virgin. move on. I'm wearing white.
All right, Ira fans, continue to text TAKEOVER to 345-345. Text TAKEOVER to 345-345. That's the Bourbon Street TAKEOVER with the stick carriers, fanretreat.com, Joe Bucks fan. The final details, I saw a PowerPoint, Ira. Fantastic details on this encompassing trip for Bucks fans to opening day in New Orleans. We're talking every last detail, options as far as taking a bus from the stadium to the airport so you can, you know, have a place for your bag and get right to the airport and get home on Sunday night. A lot of little options. The party for the night before is getting finalized. Really cool stuff. I know the commission is very excited about it. But we are so excited to be partnering with FanRetreat.com all the time. FanRetreat.com, you can get all your tickets, your hotel rooms, your flights, anywhere to any event in the country, and period. Anything. You're going, let's say, Ira, let's say you're going to see your beloved Giants this summer in San Francisco. You can buy your flight at FanRetreat.com, your hotel, your rent-a-car, everything. But to get information, it's about up to 400 or so Bucks fans already have sent their text TAKEOVER to 345-345. That's how to get the fastest info, and that's going to be your fastest way to get discounts on the tickets, which will be limited for the actual game. Great stuff from fanretreat.com.
Since we last recorded, obviously Dwight Clark passed away, ALS.
Yes.
You had an excellent column on JoeBucksFan.com.
Thank you, sir.
You were there at the catch. You covered that game, and a couple things jumped out at me. To this, you know, I watched the game live. I vividly, like it was yesterday, I remember that play.
You were only 5 years old.
I was just out of high school. But Mike Florio said that was a watershed moment. Before that, it was only every year. It was one of four teams: Raiders, Steelers, Dolphins, and there was the Cowboys. That changed the NFL. That play changed the NFL, and he's right about that. Because it was, and you know, the Cowboys were basically the Patriots of their day. They called them America's team, but they were America's most hated team. And here it looked like they were.
Hold on, let me stop you right there and amplify your point. To back up what Lee's saying, Steve, the 49ers entered that game with a better record than Dallas. They were 13-3. Dallas was 12-4. They had played in October and won 45-14. And they were playing at home. The Cowboys were 3-point favorites.
Wow.
People still didn't believe Foley in the 49ers, and why should they? Mm-hmm. The 49ers were a terrible franchise. More abundant. Nice. All right, keep going with your point.
Well, the two point things in your column that jumped out at me, even though I watched that game live and I vividly remember it, and you watched the replays, I forgot all about it was a 6-yard pass. Technically, it was like a 30-yard pass because Montana was buying so much time, fading back.
That's right.
But it was third and six, third and goal from the six, if I remember right. That's jumped out. Another one, 43 degrees.
Yes.
43 degrees. And you don't think of that. San Francisco, 43 degrees.
Yeah, brisk.
Yeah. But here's one.
And six turnovers by the 49ers.
And they still won.
Six. Yes.
But here's the trivia I was going to drop on you. The connection to the Hall of Fame, I don't think Dwight Clark gets in maybe a sympathy vote down as a senior. But obviously Montana, no question. To this day, I think he was throwing that ball away. To this day.
Interesting.
I remember watching it live.
He says absolutely not.
I think he was throwing it away. He's like, you know, there's only one guy that's going to get there.
I think that's right.
If Clark can't get it, I'm throwing it away. But I remember watching it live, and I even said to myself, he's throwing it away. And then Clark comes out of nowhere and catches that. But here was my trivia I'm going to drop on you. I learned this.
Oh, that was a third down play?
Maybe it was fourth down. I think it was third.
No, it wasn't fourth down because Walsh told him in the huddle, if there's nothing there, throw it away, and we'll live for one more play or whatever.
Here's the trivia, and I didn't know this until yesterday. I heard this on Chris Russo's show, Mad Dog Radio, Sirius XM.
Of which I expect to be back in September.
He was whining yesterday that he goes, I can't get Ira on here 30 weeks a year.
You got to tell me more after the show.
The trivia I was going to drop on here, Dwight Clark, his last game in college, he played for Clemson, his last game in college was the Gator Bowl against Ohio State. You know where I'm going with this?
Keep going.
That was when Woody Hayes punched Charlie Bauman.
Wow.
That was his last college game. And who was on Woody Hayes' staff? Mark Duffner.
That's outstanding trivia. Outstanding trivia. I might ask Coach Duffner about that today.
Because he was on Woody Hayes' staff. He's not that old of a guy, Duffner. So.
You know what? I think Dwight Clark and Montana, both, I believe, came in the class of 79. Montana, certainly. Yes. They were third-year players when they made one of the most memorable connections in NFL history.
We'll go back to the Bucks right after I say this. Did you hear the story about how Clark came to the 49ers?
No.
Walsh went to Clemson to work out Steve Fuller.
That's
but
right.
Before he got there, he called Fuller's house. They were living off campus. And it just so happened Dwight Clark was his roommate. He didn't know Dwight Clark from the Man on the Moon. I think Clark only had like 20 catches that
year.
So
he answered the phone?
He answered the phone. Clark had his golf bags packed on his shoulder. He was heading out the door to go play golf. And Walsh called up. Anyone talk to Fuller? And he said, well, I'm going to come in to work out. You're a receiver, huh? You want to stick around and catch some balls? He goes, yeah, I'll stick around and catch some balls from Fuller. And he impressed Walsh by just catching balls from Fuller.
And he became a 49er.
Walsh said, we're going to draft him. And Walsh's front office said, don't do it. You can get him as a free agent. He said, we don't know that. I'm going to draft him.
Wow.
What
That's
a story.
Outstanding.
Okay, back to the Bucks.
Sure. All right,
Sage. We digress, Steve. We digress.
Hey, no problem at all. Sage, I think we touched on it last time, but Jameis Winston mentioned on NFL radio that, hey, Ryan Jensen is already starting some fights with Gerald McCoy. They're getting after it. You know, he spoke to media last week, and he spoke up. It was a story on ESPN that said, you know, he appreciates that guys are getting more of that vinegary type of attitude. And he said that he implied that the Bucks brought him in to bring that, which is no big secret. But to hear him say it, it really felt like, hey, they're asking him to pick some fights here and maybe get into it with McCoy or whatever. And I'm just curious what your deep knowledge of how these things work. So, Ira, what do you make of that? Do you think they're ordering a hit, or should they be saving it for training camp when you can really hit somebody and get into, you know, change a culture or a mentality on a line in a real way? What do you think's going on here?
I think this, you know, the nastiness of Jensen and maybe him inciting some fights, I think it begs a very important question for our listeners, and I think they're very into this. And that question is very simple, and I'll throw it right out to you. What kind of training camp can we expect? What kind of training camp with all the restrictions? We know that. The NFL, you know, has curtailed the padded practices. Safety is paramount because they're worried about lawsuits, and rightfully so.
Ravens just got popped,
And the Ravens just got popped. So, Lee, within the confines of the structure that the NFL has instituted, how much more of a physical camp can Dirk Cutter promote? Does he want to promote it? Or is his attitude going to be once again, and I understand it, and so do you, let's get through August without getting players hurt and start the season. What kind of training camp are you expecting?
Well, I can only go by the man's history, and Cutter doesn't believe in hard practices. However, Steve and I have written about this several times. I think you've taken notice. I hate to use the word urgency, but it just seems like there's a different mindset now. And I think I've used the term before, backs are against the wall. I think these coaches know that
jobs are up for grabs.
Exactly. If they don't have a winning record this year, some of these guys aren't going to be back. Some of these guys are going to be looking for work come January. Whether that's fair or not, that's the NFL.
Does that translate into a more physical camp, Lee?
Possibly. Maybe Cutter is seeing the light. Maybe he's having an epiphany. You know, maybe he's like, you know what? Maybe I need to do something to get back to those fast starts that you and I and Steve always harp about. Perhaps. I mean, obviously, it's coming from the GM. Now, we've seen Cutter. He's having these guys run gassers. I can't remember last time I saw an OTA practice where they had 10 minutes of gassers to end a practice.
Ira, you dodged the question. I'm asking you if the hit was ordered.
I like the hit.
Do you think
somebody ordered? Well, it's interesting because Lee's made this point, and it's a fair point. When there has been skirmishes in training camp, and we ask Cutter about it, he always looks at us and says, that's not the story of today's practice. You guys are crazy if you focus on that. He doesn't like it.
Oh, doesn't like it.
At least publicly.
He gets bent. I mean, I never see him get so mad unless General Lane's asking about fights.
Steve, I'm going to answer your question directly.
Thank you.
You don't bring Ryan Jensen, Bo Allen, Vinny Curry, Pierre Paul, Vita Vea, Unrein onto this team unless you want to get tough. You want to get tough. You want to be a tougher team physically. Again, I go back to that Arthur Blank thing in Atlanta. We were soft. We were soft. Who's on the staff? Mike Smith and Cutter. Mm-hmm. Whose jobs are on the line? Mike Smith, Cutter, Jason White. Hey, everybody's job is on the line. Steve, you can't bring these guys in and then have a soft training camp. So even with these regulations, there's got to be a way to get it tougher. And you know what? I think the fans want it. I think they're playing right into the fans. If a guy's going to get hurt, a guy's going to get hurt. Lee, I don't think it necessarily increases the chances of a guy tearing an ACL if you're playing physical football in training camp.
Well, I'll tell you what. They had a
soft, other teams do it.
They had a soft training camp last year. Cutter may argue that. I differ with that opinion. I've said this before. They went to Minnesota their second game because of the hurricane.
Now, they kicked Chicago's ass.
Well, Chicago's a garbage team.
All right.
But they went up to Minnesota, and I was there. I saw it with my own eyes. I was in the locker room. They, excuse my language, got the shit beat out of them. They got physically pummeled. It was the proverbial back alley beating.
Expletives on the Ira Kaufman podcast, Stephen? You're the moderator here. Is this acceptable? I think it is. We give Lee a little
I apologize to our sponsors, our proud sponsors, but they did. They got pounded. They had an alley beating up in Minnesota.
Ryan Jensen is here in part to make everybody around them better, and not just on the offensive line, to make the defensive lines tougher.
That's why I hope they put Vita V on them and break the rookie in right.
And Steve, ahead. I just thought of another thing. What's the one thing we keep hearing about Ryan Jensen? It ain't about technique. It ain't about finesse. He's a tough son of a gun. Mm-hmm. That's what everybody says, Lee. Yeah. Even his position coaches.
Harbaugh said the same thing, John Harbaugh, his old coach at Baltimore. But yeah, they had a soft training camp last year. They go up to Minnesota and got – I've never seen so many guys hurt. I mean, just physically beat up.
And you saw it in the locker room.
Saw it with my own eyes.
Jensen's here to beat people up, Steve.
All right, Sage, I just want to know if you thought they ordered a hit on Gerald McCoy.
Ordered
that's all.
Hit. Frankie Pantangelo and Rosati brothers.
not the toughest.
Salazzo, he's very good with the knife, Lee.
Where's Clemenza when you need him? By the way, Steve, these are all Godfather references.
All right, Sage.
We got to get Steve to see Godfather 1. We got to see. Steve, come on now.
You got to get a six-pack. Come on. That's a piece of work. Artwork, that is.
Team Glazer, Ira. Team Glazer.
Yes, sir.
Speaking of ordering hits, we finally wrote up the quote you had from Joel Glazer from your sit-down in Atlanta last month. And I'll just read it to you here. You were talking to him about the explosiveness of Ronald Jones and that with this organization.
What he brings. Yep, yep.
And Glazer says to you, part of the small sliver that was actually on the record that we got to share, as opposed to the hours and hours you guys sat drinking cognac and all that stuff. I'm just kidding, of
and
course.
And then they went off to dinner and left me stranded over there. I went to I went to Chick-fil-A.
All right, Glazer says it's something that's definitely needed, meaning an explosive runner, and I know Dirk is excited to have him. A player like that will help the entire offense. I thought it was very telling when, you know, Glazer says definitely needed. You know, you don't often hear the Glazers talk about clear and definitive needs for the roster, and there they are saying that was definitely needed for a team that had Doug Martin, a guy they chose to pay a fortune of money. A team that, you know, is moving the ball up and down the field with the rest of the NFL, second and first downs. What did you make of the meaning behind that line?
I think Steve's on to something, Lee. You know, normally you would expect the Glazers to say, Ira, he's a rookie. You don't want to put too much pressure on a rookie. We got Peyton Barber. We got some other guys who will work him in. He didn't go that route. That shows you, and it backs up Dirk Cutter's statement, that they did a bad job on explosive plays last year. It was a big priority after the 2016 season. Maybe the number one priority, picking up yards and chunks, right? And weapons for Winston, and they went out and got DeSean Jackson, you know, get those 40-yard passes. They only had five runs of 20 yards or more. That's terrible.
Oh, that's terrible. It was terrible.
You know, five in 16 games. Other teams have 20, 25, you know, 20-yard runs. And Dirk Cutter told us again a week or two ago, it's a long haul going 80 yards in 14 plays, Lee. Things break down. You get a penalty.
Yes, yes.
You get a sack. Mm-hmm. That's true. He's not making that stuff up. You look at the stats throughout the league, Lee, and teams that have to go 80 yards, you know, score touchdowns, you know, maybe 6% of the time,
really?
Or something. You know, if you got to go 40 yards, you're 60% of the time. It's a long haul. If you got to get some yards and chunks, and this team desperately needs, and that's what Ronald Jones is here for.
Well, it's interesting you say that, and I'm not disagreeing, but I'm terrible at math, unlike you, but it just math-wise, the more plays you have in a drive, the more chances you are to screw up.
Yes.
It's just that simple.
Yes.
Now, here's something that's interesting, what your feedback on is, along those lines. You know, Cutter is saying we didn't have explosive plays. He's right. Yet the Bucs had one of the best offenses in the league as far as first downs, as far as yardage. We all know the red zone was terrible. They were 24th in the league.
Third down percentage, they weren't too bad. They weren't too bad on offense.
We kind of gloss over this a lot, and this is a big factor as well. And Greg Rosenthal at NFL.com is the one that dug this up. The Bucs led the league in fumbles per drive last year. You can't play Santa Claus like that.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't score. If you're coughing up the ball, you can't score.
They didn't protect the ball well. But Lee makes a good point, Steve. Between the 20s, they moved the ball very effectively, bogged down in the red zone, of course, but the Glazer comments about Ronald Jones, I think, are illuminating. They're tired of seeing, you know, the lack of explosive plays because they see other teams doing it. The Eagles were pretty darn good at it, even though you don't look at the receiving core of the Eagles, and I don't think it compares to the Bucs. I really don't.
Man.
You know, you got Aguilar and some other guys, but, you know, Mike Evans is a stud.
Yeah.
At least in theory, he's a stud. I don't think Mike Evans had a very good season by Mike Evans' standards. I don't.
That's saying a lot.
I don't.
That's saying a lot.
You know, I believe the year before he led the league maybe in third downs generated. He slipped markedly in that area. That's not all his fault. Let's get back to throwing the ball to Mike Evans even when somebody's in his vicinity. I trust Mike Evans to catch that ball.
Oh, sure. He'll fight for it. Yes.
And, you know, something you might hear next week on our podcast, the connection between DeSean Jackson and Jameis Winston, that has to get established.
I'm going to ask you about this, and we've talked about this before, but fans love hearing about this. If Jameis can connect with Mike Evans, which he can, if he develops a connection, which he seems to have done with Chris Godwin, he's obviously got chemistry with Brate.
Yes.
It appears he's got chemistry with O.J. Howard. He's got no problem with all these guys. He's got
and, Humphreys,
with,
and Humphreys.
And Humphreys. Oh, obviously Humphreys. He's got no problem with all these guys except for one dude. I suggest that Ignall on Jameis. If he's able to hit all these receivers and doesn't have an issue, but he's got an issue with one guy, that's an outlier to me.
It's still, Steve, it's still a bit of a mystery. What happened between Winston and DeSean Jackson, or what didn't happen between yes. Winston and DeSean. It's a bit of a mystery.
Steve, the
coaches are telling us that Jackson's open all the time. That's what they're telling us.
It's a very deep mystery because I think we mentioned this on the podcast, not sure. Yeah, they only threw to him once in the red zone all year. All year.
Wow.
Once. Wow. When they, now, that means when they got into the red zone, they only threw to DeSean Jackson one time.
They're in the red zone 50 times, Lee.
So
50
so
times.
That's kind of stunning. And, you know, you look at Mike Evans' career, and he's been pretty consistent. He only catches about 52, 53% of the targets coming his way. And Derek Brooks once said that that's awful. He was on with Steve Dumig a couple years ago. I remember writing that up at 50%. You just can't do that in this league and be great. So I think that's a little bit of a problem there. Even though, you know, Evans has that chemistry with Jameis, it's not as great as it could be. You know, where as opposed to Humphreys and Brate, they catch a tremendous percentage of balls thrown their way. And
that builds trust with the quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, that's really where I think the greatest chemistry lies. But don't forget Alshon Jeffrey in Philly.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, they've got receivers there. All right, our NFL Network Top 100. I'm going to sum it up real quick. Players vote. It's a players-only vote. They vote during the year, last season. The NFL says 700 to 900 players vote, and they pick their top 100. They tally it up, and then they create a TV show out of it to count up or down, however you want to look at it, from 100 to number one.
With interviews, players talking about players.
Yeah, fun show. Great off-season fodder for NFL Network. Buccaneers have appeared on that list for years, going back to Josh Freeman. I think it was 80 or 82 one year. Mike Williams was number 80 or so. Vincent Jackson's been there. Gerald McCoy's been a regular as high as 28. Last year, he was 52. Mike Evans. Jameis made it last year. He was in the 50s. And he was a little disappointed about that. You know, he wanted better. You know, Jameis holds himself to a very high standard. But so far, Ira, they have been through.
They're through 70 players.
They're up to the 20s now. The next show will be up to 30.
From 30 to 21, yeah.
We got no Buccaneers.
Zero.
To be found. And I think that says something because I don't think it's a hoax. The players may not give it all the attention they want. There may be no reason why the league doesn't have everybody vote versus just 20 players on a team or the starters or something. However, no Bucks, no McCoy, maybe nobody, period. What do you make of this?
Lee, let's be brutally honest here. The number one reason that there's probably not going to be any Bucks on the top 100 is the Bucks were 5-11.
Yeah.
That's the number one reason. You have to remember that. I don't think these players are voting in September. They're probably voting in December. And by December, the Bucs had a lost season, without question. Look at a team like Jacksonville. Jalen Ramsey probably could have made it 2 years ago. But he's certainly going to make it this year.
Oh, yeah.
Calais Campbell, you know, he's going to make the top 20 probably. And deservedly so. He had a fantastic season. But so did his football team.
About 20 Bucs fans right now just fell off. Ran off into a culvert.
Because every time I mention Calais Campbell.
Yeah.
Look, let's look at the Jameis Winston example. You could argue, Lee, and I think you got some stats to back it up. You could argue Winston was better in 2017 than he was in 2016.
Yeah,
you could argue. Even though he was hurt
outside
and missed
of fumbles,
three games.
His stats improved.
But except Steve just said he was 52 last year. This year he's not going to make the top 100. The Bucks were 9-7. They went to 5-11. Do I need to say any more than that?
No, sir. Just get his bits.
And it hurts you with the Pro Bowl. It hurts you with the top 100.
Hurts you with everything.
Hurts you with everything.
Hurts you with your contract. hurts with everything.
Hurts you with everything, Lee. And fair or not, if you're a quarterback, you got to win.
Yeah,
got to win.
And
Jameis knows that. Nobody knows it more than Winston.
You know, it's interesting. The stat geeks, they go bananas when you say, you know, win stats meaningless. Well, what are you playing for? The win means everything. Win means everything. What's Jameis' biggest knock? What is his biggest knock? losses. That's his big. He can't help it, of course. The defense coughed up four games last year. He can't help it that they had no picking against Patriots.
He can't help it if the defense doesn't show up on the road in the first half of these games.
He can't help it, but at the end of the day, it's wins and losses. Why do people mock Jeff George? He couldn't win. He racked up stats. I know some Bucks fans, oh, you're stuck in the 80s. Well, name me another quarterback that had excellent stats but no wins. Jeff George is only good.
Jay Cutler gets a little bit of that. He's had a little bit of success. Little bit.
And you're right.
It's Ryan Tannehill. You got to win.
He didn't have stats, did he?
But you got
to
win. You got
to
win.
You have to win. Yeah. Oh, by the way, you know, I can't remember who it was. Oh, it was Florio, and I love Florio. You know, he was saying the other day, it's a compelling argument that no team would want Jameis right now. Well, I would suggest Miami would fall over themselves to have Jameis.
I think that's a crazy statement.
I can't take this anymore. Come on. Now, you got to bring more than that. After the 2014 season, the Bucs had two wins. You know what? They had three guys on the list. Mike Evans, Lavonte David, Gerald McCoy. All of a sudden, these guys have all fallen off the map. Now, maybe Evans sneaks into the top 30. Doesn't seem that way. But that's a profound lack of respect from around the league. They were 2-14, and they had three guys on the list.
It's a big slap at McCoy. I can tell you that right now, because he's been on this list more than once. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the six or seven defensive tackles already on the list. Jarrell Casey, I don't know anybody in this league that would rather have Jarrell Casey than Gerald McCoy. Casey's already on the list, and it looks like McCoy's not going to make the list. Tennessee had a good season. They made the playoffs. So, Steve, there's always going to be an outlier, and you're a master at finding them, usually when they when they screw up my statements over there. You're masterful at it. But you cannot deny that the fact that the Bucs had a bad season messed some of these players. And I'm not saying – the Bucs should have four players on the top 100. That's preposterous. I mean, that's crazy. I'm not saying Quan Alexander belongs on there, although I think he's going to be a heck of a player, and he's already pretty good. Brent Grimes didn't make it. You know, he didn't make it.
Yeah, he was hurt a lot, too. That's the thing. Jameis was hurt. Levante was
hurt. And I'm not arguing for Grimes Mike Evans, who I've called the best player on the Bucs in past years.
And I think you're right.
And I think I'm right. McCoy bothers me a little bit. McCoy bothers me a little bit. Now, Lavonte had no interceptions and no sacks. Although let's not go crazy.
Yeah. Well, he was hurt, too. What would be funny, and I do not expect this, what would be funny, because this guy was branded by the PFF tribe coming out of college. He was a bust. And to this day, people have that in their mind that Donovan Smith is horrible because a couple of nitwits in Ireland in their dorm room determined that Donovan Smith is a bust.
Doesn't one of our local analysts say that they should go out and get Donald Penn and dump Donovan Smith?
Ian Beckles, okay. Yeah. Well, Ian Beckles is...
He played the offensive line.
He played the offensive line, that's true. I love Ian, but he's also things that Gerald McCoy is garbage too. So, but it would be funny as heck if Donovan Smith wound up on one of those lists. Funny as heck. Only because of the reaction people would have.
Steve. Big year for Donovan Smith, by the way. It'll be, we'll talk about it on another podcast, but he's looking for a big extension. Bucks think he's in the top half of left tackles in this league. A lot of Buck fans don't think he's anything special.
Like I said, he was branded before he came out of college, and they think these numbers crunchers are gospel.
This will be year four for Donovan Smith. He ain't making the top 30. Don't worry about that.
They've got a lot of guys who have to earn their money.
Donovan, Quan, and Allie.
And Jameis.
That goes without saying.
Yeah.
And on that note, what I think is going to be really interesting this season, and we'll talk about it down the road. We've already talked about it. But when you look at the fact that for DeSean Jackson, essentially this is a contract year for him because he doesn't have guaranteed money for next year. So that means Jackson, who's extremely savvy and knows his capabilities, this is a contract year for him, and I think that could push some frustration a little bit for him if it doesn't happen early when it comes to the chemistry.
Not necessarily in terms of being on the Bucks in 2019. You're talking about
in general
landing on another team.
Right, because he has no more guaranteed money after this year, so that means the Bucks don't have to pay him $11 million next year. And
if Godwin keeps coming on?
Right. So if they let him go or they can't find a trade partner, he becomes a free agent or a non-guaranteed money guy. He knows it's a prove it year for him. That's just the way the NFL works with contracts. And there's a lot of guys. A lot of guys got to earn their money this year. And frankly, McCoy's in that boat too because they're paying him a fortune. He has no more guaranteed money. Everybody's got to earn it, which makes this year so interesting.
And they might have just drafted his replacement.
Ding, 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 ding. They spent a first round pick on his replacement. And just to give fans an idea how quick things change in the NFL, a year ago, this Bucs organization was sweating bullets. They were going to lose Kevin Pamphile. They thought he was on the cusp of something special. They thought they had a steal in the draft. He was drafted fourth round. I can't remember off to that land. Formerly half of the milk cartons. And they were really worried they were going to lose him. And what happened? They waved goodbye to him. That's how quickly. He was graded last year, last year, 2016, their best offensive lineman. Internal grading, their best offensive lineman. A year later, see ya.
Yeah, it was at the bye week. That's what Dirk Koetter had said. He was the top guy.
And I asked him at the combine this past winter, and he said, yeah, he was, for the season, he reiterated that he was their top graded offensive lineman internally.
All right, Sage, Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa, Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon, those are the places to go. EdMorrisCadillacTampa.com, EdMorrisCadillacBrandon.com. You're going to be marching your white shirt out there to practice, putting on your sunscreen.
Hey, next week we got the mandatory mini. Everybody's going to show up.
Yeah, next
Steve.
Week's an exciting week. We got our big podcast on Tuesday that we've hinted at, and, of course, mandatory mini camp. Everybody here, hopefully. JPP, we'll get to talk to him. Maybe he'll even be out there today, Ira. I expect you to be right in his face.
Right in his face.
Just don't point a finger at him. He doesn't like that.
Oh.